Hey, how's everybody doing? Hope you're having a fantastic day. So this week, unfortunately, Ethan could not join me for this second episode, but what's really nice is that this is the second episode. So I'm kind of trying to do a doubleheader here because it's been a bit. Both of us have been a bit busy, so we haven't been able to do an episode in a while. So I figured that I would double up and do the eighth video with Ethan and then the ninth video on my own, because we're still kind of in the baby parts of De Revelatione. We're still in the laying the foundation. We're still in our fundamental theology adolescence right now. Because what we have been doing recently is we started out kind of defining what apologetics is, what fundamental theology is, what sacred theology is, and all of that. But now what we need to discuss is we need to discuss the fundamental notions of the science. So the notion of revelation, the notion of dogma, the notion of mystery, and now the notion of what is supernaturality? What does that mean? Which this is kind of a sort of synthetic treatment of all that we've talked about before, because everything we've been talking about are supernatural, of the supernatural order. And now we're going to be talking about what is the supernatural order itself. So once we get all of this out of the way, and this is going to be the last video that's strictly teaching the notion, the sort of fundamental notions. After this, we're going to take what we've learned, and we're going to talk about, okay, is revelation possible? Is revelation something which is fitting? And so on. We're going to be giving both a negative defense, which is going to go against, for example, agnostics, pantheists, and so on, which are going to deny it from the part of the subject, the part of the object, the part of the thing, blah, blah, blah. We're going to be rejecting what they teach when it comes to the impossibility of divine revelation. We're also going to be giving a positive defense that something like revelation is coherent. It's not something which is impossible. So that's where we're going to be going from now. But right now we are merely going to be discussing the last of the fundamental notions we need to know before we get into a sort of the fight, if you want to put it like that. So we're still in the theoretical part, not even close to the practical part. Still laying those foundations. So Garrigou is going to split this chapter where we talk about the notion of supernaturality. He's going to split it into two parts, and he always does this. First, he's going to go over the Catholic notion, which basically means we start out with the nominal definition. Okay, what is supernatural, supernatural? What does that mean? And then we're going to go on to the teaching of the church, the explicit teaching of the church. And then we're going to go to the condemned errors. And that's going to give us a sort of general idea of the notion of supernaturality. And after that, we're going to be getting into a more particular explanation, division, and so on of the topic. So what is this nominal definition of supernatural that we're going to that Garrigou presents? So it's actually really, really simple. Super above nature, natura, super nature. So yeah, it's basically something which is not only above some sort of particular nature, some sort of particular, and really when we talk about nature, which we'll be getting into a little bit later, when we talk about nature, we actually are referring to the sort of principle or root of the being and acting of a certain thing, not only above those individual natures, but above nature as a whole, as a concept, either things that are created or even, as we'll see against the Scotists, things as creatable, as that something that is supernatural just is beyond nature, whether actual or possible. So what is the Catholic notion? So when it comes to our notion of what the supernatural is, positively speaking, we're going to say that it's above nature in two senses. Because obviously, when we talk about the supernatural being supernatural, we don't mean that it's above nature in every sense. So, for example, while it's above the powers of nature, it isn't above that which is fitting to nature. There are certain things about nature to which it's above, certain things which it is not above. So when it comes to the things that it is above, first, it's above the powers of nature. So this is obvious, that which nature can do. Second, it's not only above the powers, but it's also above what's called the exigencies. So fancy word, but exigencies basically means the just claims. So, for example, there's a certain exigency of man to have social interaction, to have food, to have water. So since there's these exigencies that we have, there is going to be a sort of corresponding good that fulfills those exigencies. So the supernatural is above both our powers and our exigencies. There's no exigency that we have for supernatural grace or for the beatific vision or for anything like that, contra some heretics. But it's not above two things. This is going to be very important that it's two and not just one. But it's not above two things. So first, it's not above our what's called passive perfectibility. Our passive perfectibility is that which God can raise us up to, basically. So, for example, the substantially supernatural, rather than accidentally supernatural, which we're only a supernatural per a certain accident, whether entitative habit or operative habit, that is sanctifying grace or the theological virtues, or there's accidents of the categories of accidents. But the substantial supernatural, that is that which is that which is God, that which is substantially supernatural, that is above our passive perfectibility. God could not make me God, substantially speaking. That's impossible. So this passive perfectibility is what we call obediential potency. So obediential potency is that potency or that passive capability that we have of being raised up by God. So basically the fact that we obey when God acts upon us. So for example, if we think about a flute, if we think about a flute, when it comes to a flute has a certain obediential potency in relation to man to be played and to produce music. And really when we take this flute, we're taking this flute and we're putting this flute upon a higher order, upon the order of music making. Now, there's no natural potency of that flute to play. That just doesn't exist. It's really fundamentally a hunk of wood. Is it made out of wood? I don't know what a flute's made out of. Metal, right? I'm not going to look this up on stream. But there's no sort of active, if you want to put it, potency towards this or power towards this. Nor is there a sort of like sort of correspondence to some sort of correspondence within it in order to do this thing. Rather, it's merely obediential. So by the will of a higher power, it can be brought up to act above itself. So this is the way in which philosophy is related to theology. This is the way that nature is related to grace, the way that natural knowledge is related to faith. There's a certain obediential potency of the natural order for the higher order. So it does not exceed the passive perfectibility if God happens to will to bring us up to this nature, this supernature. And second, it's not above that which befits our nature. So we have to be careful because there's a distinction between that which befits our nature and that to which our nature has an exigency towards. Because as we said, exigency is something which we have this natural correspondence to within us. And in this way, there's a certain debt that's being formed, a sort of debt of nature that we can talk about. But when it comes to the fittingness is basically, that would be nice if this were to occur. So this may be a weird sort of example, but If I have an appetite, let's say, for steak, to eat, I don't know. Let's think of a terrible. I can't think of a terrible, like a chuck round or something. That's a terrible cut of meat. That fulfills that appetite as much as, like, you know, any other steak, really. I just kind of have an ordering towards steak in general. But let's say I have just a glorious steak cooked by, like, Gordon Ramsay or something. That's of a completely different order. That's befitting to my appetite for steak. But it's not something which I have an exigency towards. I know, terrible example, but you kind of get the idea of the difference between an exigency, which there's some sort of debt for, and a befittingness that takes it up and fulfills it in a different order, in a completely different order, where there's no debt which is formed. So we can also, and I kind of forgot to speak about this, but this was in supposed to be discovered, talked about the nominal nominal definition section. But basically, we can speak about supernatural, that which is above nature, in relation to two powers of nature. So we can speak of it in like the sort of active power of making or producing, the generative power, if you want to put it like the sort of lower powers of generation and sensation. And these are what are called miracles. Those are miracles. We can't do miracles by our own natural powers. So this would be, for example, like raising the dead. Can't do that. Knowing the future in a weird way, can't do that. And I guess knowing the future wasn't the best example, because there's the second one is the exceeding of our knowing powers, the exceeding of our knowing powers. So the first is miracles, and the second is the order of supernatural truths. So with the order of supernatural truths, this is something that exceeds all of our powers of being able to know anything. So this would be like the Trinity, the hypostatic union, the beatific vision, and so on. These are the mysteries that we talked about earlier. So we have miracles causing mysteries on the other hand. And miracles aren't as much of a concern for us. Maybe some of you it is a concern, but it's not that much of a concern for me. Basically, there's like naturalists, agnostics, and deists. They're all going to be the ones who are denying miracles out there. But when it comes to our knowing powers, there are certain heretics who, on the one hand, are going to deny that the supernatural order exceeds our powers, because notice we say that it doesn't, that it exceeds our powers and that it exceeds our exigencies. One are going to say that it does not exceed our powers. And these are going to be the naturalists, semi-naturalists, and Pelagians. Really, for our purposes, most would just recognize it as Pelagians. And then on the other hand, we have those who deny that it exceeds the exigencies of our nature. And this would be Baianists, Jansenists, and actually now, especially after the 19th century, some reform thinkers like Hermann Bavinck. They say that actually the grace is somehow due or owed to nature. And this surrounds a bit the debate on the natural desire to see God with de Lubachian notions, but I'm not going to get into that. But what we see is something like Bavinckianism, let's say, or they call it the deeper Protestant conceptions. It's very absurd, very cringe. But something like the deeper Protestant conception on the one hand, and Pelagianism on the other hand, well, they seem opposed, because Pelagianism is just seemingly going to deny the supernatural order and the deeper Protestant, I'll just call them the Reformed, although a neo-Reformed, I'll call them neo-Reformed. So the neo-Reformed, they, on the other hand, they're going to seemingly just deny the natural order, because they say, well, actually, when it comes to the gifts of original justice, when it comes to grace, those were due and owed to the nature of Adam. So it seems like they deny the natural order. They deny the supernatural order. So how can you say that they agree? Well, they agree in the sense that they are going to say that the rewards of beatitude are owed to nature. Because really, when it comes to the Pelagians are going to say, well, their works are somehow, their works now are somehow have a supernatural reward done to them. When it comes to the neo-reform, they're going to say, well, our works, or our works did in the covenant of works, but and our works, they have a supernatural reward owed unto them. So they're going to be agreeing with this proportionality of nature to a supernatural reward, which is gravely erroneous. So then the supernaturality of miracles, it's going to, as I said, the determinists or the pantheists, they're going to deny it on the part of the subject, that is God. And then agnostics on the part of the object, that is us. And then, yeah, we just have a bunch of weird heretics when it comes to this. Okay, so now getting into a little bit of a more detailed consideration, I guess detailed consideration, if you want to put it like that. Detailed consideration of what the term natural means, because kind of before we, I guess I punted it a little bit by just saying like natural, that's rooted in the sort of principle from which flows our powers, exigencies, and so forth. But this term natural is actually very sharply defined. Theologians typically are going to speak of this actually in accordance with the four causes, which makes it very helpful, very easy to remember. So first, they're going to talk about the very nature or essence itself. And I'm just going to read off of and explain what Garrigou says explicitly. The very nature or essence itself, namely whatever is required so as to constitute some being in its species. Thus, the body and the rational soul constitute man's nature. So in this part, he's talking basically about the natural predicates, whether metaphysical or physical parts. So the essence of something. So for us, it'd be rational animality. It's the fact that we are rational animals. And this rational animality is formed by our body and soul. So this, that is what is natural for us. So on this first point, since what is supernatural is above this very nature or essence, then that which is supernatural is going to have to be, for us, accidental. So it's going to have to be an accident. It can't be a substance. It has to be an accident. And then second, he's going to go over, and this is going to be the material cause, the passivities that are in a nature in relation to proportionate agents. So the passivities that are in a nature in relation to proportionate agents. So this, this since it's basically the material cause, actually, this, in terms of obediential potency, we said as before, supernatural doesn't mean above our obediential potency. So it doesn't mean supernatural doesn't go above what we are elevatable to. That would be a contradiction in terms. So the supernatural does not exceed material cause in this sense. And then we also have the powers or faculties that flow from the essence itself, in man, the intellect and the will, as well as the activities to which these faculties are essentially ordered. So we have, what are called proper accidents, we have certain faculties which immediately flow from our soul, basically. Our intellect and our will is the example which is given. So this is above what our intellect and will, what our powers are proportioned to. So my intellect is proportioned to its adequate object is being, under the really being, as knowable. And my will, its adequate object is being under the aspect of desirability, so being as desirable. So when it comes to natural, finite, or even in a negative sense, infinite being, when it comes to being, I am proportioned to it. Now, what is supernatural is above that. So what is above that? So what's above that, and we kind of went over this in defining the nature of theology, so this should sound familiar. What is going to be above that? Well, what is above objects of my faculties is going to be God under the formal notion of the deity. And this makes sense since habits and acts are specified by their formal objects, or placed in certain species by their formal objects. So that which is supernatural is going to have a supernatural object. Now, which is natural is going to have a natural object. So the supernatural object of our intellect and will is going to be God. So these are going to form things like the supernatural virtues that are going to flow forth from that second nature, which is a certain accidental participation in the divine nature, which we call sanctifying grace. So, and this also kind of destroys certain wrong notions about the natural desire to see God. Because we have a conditional and inefficacious, as we'll talk about later, natural desire to see God. But since our wills do not have the God qua his divinity as part of their adequate object, only God under the aspect of the author of nature, which we're going to talk about later, we can't have this natural desire for the beatific vision in the same way that we couldn't have a natural participation in the beatific vision. It could be something which is purely abstractive, like I think about, like Plato thought about the beatific vision, in the same abstractive, that is conditional in an efficacious way, Plato could desire the beatific vision. But when it comes to an efficacious and unconditional desire for the beatific vision, just as efficacious and unconditional knowledge of the beatific vision, which only comes by the virtue of faith, since it's a mystery, this isn't something that can happen by our natural powers without being elevated. And then under the fourth, he says the exigencies of this nature, or whatever is required so that it may arrive at its natural end, thus the divine concurrence necessary so that any given second cause may act in its own order. This is called the debt of nature. So the debt of nature are what we need to reach our end, basically. Our end actually being God as author of nature. That's our natural end. So we have a new end which is given to us by supernatural grace. And then finally, in a rational nature, or rather a person, the merit coming from its legitimate natural action, namely a right to a proportional reward, that is for achieving the natural end, this is owed to the person naturally. So there's a certain natural principle of merit. So this helps us differ because, as we said, there's not an elevation above or beyond obediential potency. And it's also not against the what is fitting for the nature. So this helps us distinguish between what's called the contranatural, so that which is against nature, and also from the free, artificial, fortuitous, and all of that, which somebody may try to catch you a gotcha when it comes to this. But, okay, so this also helps us understand another very important distinction. So the relative supernatural and the absolute supernatural. So the relative supernatural, which I'm just going to call preternatural. So I'm just going to say supernatural, preternatural. So the supernatural is that which is above all nature, whether created or creatable. So the whole of nature, or the whole of possible nature as well. That is what we mean by supernatural. But when it comes to the preternatural is going to be only above this or that nature. So for example, it is natural for man, coming from the principles, coming from his constitutive principles as a composition of body and soul, it is natural for man to have physical death. That is something which is natural to man. But it's possible for God to create certain beings to where they are immortal naturally, namely the angels, because they're not composed of matter and form. So for man to be given the gift of immortality, that is not simply speaking a supernatural gift. Rather, it's only relatively speaking a supernatural gift. That is, it's above our nature, but it's not above nature as such. So it's what's called a preternatural gift. So this helps us distinguish the various states that man could be in to kind of help conceptualize this. Man could either be in a state of pure nature, which is just the natural gifts, which proportion him to his natural end. It could also be an integral nature. So an integral nature, he not only has his natural gifts, he has certain preternatural gifts that are above his nature, but not above nature as such. And then the actual state we were in is the state of original justice. So in the state of original justice, we are given not only natural gifts, not only preternatural gifts, but also supernatural gifts. So this can help also explain things like, okay, why did Mary die? Well, the reason Mary died is because while she had the fullness of supernatural gifts and all the preternatural gifts that were necessary for her office as Mother of God. So for example, freedom from concupiscence, she did not have gifts like immortality, which is why, and that's a preternatural gift. It's not a supernatural gift. So we don't have to say that she somehow fell unto the guilt of nature as presence within her. Sorry, give me a second. Sorry about that. I just needed to get together all of the proper screenshots that I wanted. Okay, so now that we've went over the definition of the supernatural and its description briefly, it's going to be easy for us to imagine the distinctions that are going to be present. So this is the division that Garrigou provides. What's important is divided first between supernaturalitas quad substantiam and then supernaturalitas quad modum. And I know I just pronounced that as an American. I just realized that like halfway through. Supernatural according to substance and supernatural according to mode. So the distinction between this is whether the cause is intrinsic or extrinsic. So if you know your Aristotle, I think Physics Books 1 is where Aristotle talks about this. But if you know your Aristotle, you're going to know that there are two intrinsic causes. So that's the material and the formal cause. And then two extrinsic causes. So the efficient cause and the final cause. So when it comes to something that is supernatural in its efficient cause or its final cause, that's what we call modally supernatural. But when it's something which is supernatural in its formal cause, that's what we call substantially supernatural. So what's important is we don't say formal and material cause, because the material cause, remember, what is that? You guys remember? Anybody out there remember? Obediential potency. So obediential potency acts as the material cause, if you would like, of these. So the first distinction that we get between the two halves of, halves is an improper term because these are all analogous. This isn't like a genus split into species, but that's unimportant for most of you. So the distinction that we have within supernaturalitas quod substantiam is between uncreated and created. So the uncreated is that which is substantially supernatural as a substance. Substantially supernatural as a substance. So if something is subsisting of itself, in itself, and it's supernatural, that's God. So God is the uncreated supernatural according to substance. But we can also have something that is substantially supernatural and an accident. And I actually think this is some of the confusion right here with some of the Reformed authors. Is they saw substantially supernatural and they assumed that meant that somehow we believe that the believers became like a supernatural substance. No, we don't believe that. Rather, we think that they are of the predicament accident, one of the nine accidents. Really, for us, It is the habitual and actual grace, infused virtues, gifts of the Holy Ghost, and the light of glory. Those are all habits. Those are all habits. Some of them entitative habits, so habits according to the elevation of the manner of being. So that would be sanctifying grace. And then also others are of the operative habits. And also like a certain motion we can speak of as well. But anyways, those are all the big point, the point that I just went on a little side quest right there. The point is that it's distinguished between substance and accident. So a supernatural substance is God. Supernatural accidents are those that inhere in the soul. So on the other hand, we can also have, as I said, supernatural in terms of an extrinsic cause rather than in terms of an intrinsic cause. So on the part of the end, so that's obviously a final cause, those are going to be natural acts supernaturally ordered to a supernatural end. So for example, the infused moral virtues. So the infused moral virtues, those are things like justice, temperance, prudence, and all of the quasi-potential and integral parts and blah, 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 blah. All of those, basically all of secunda secundae, even the non-theological virtues, are with sanctifying grace infused in a certain degree in the soul. So when you have a woman who, let's say, is a consecrated virgin, a woman's a consecrated virgin, her virtue of chastity is ordered by supernatural charity. It's ordered towards a supernatural end. Now, on the other hand, you have like your what are they called? Vestal virgins. Is that like the term for it? I don't know. Pagans. Yeah, they are Vestal virgins. So you have these Vestal virgins. They have the natural virtue of chastity. At least we're assuming they have natural virtue of chastity. It's something which is acquired, not infused. Are they specifically different habits? So qua species, are they specifically different habits between the Vestal Virgin and the nun? No, they are specifically speaking the same habit, but they are ordered towards different ends. So since they are ordered towards different ends, the natural virtue of chastity is seen from a higher light, ordered towards a higher end, but of the same species. So this is something which is supernatural according to mode. So natural act, supernaturally ordered to a supernatural end. On the other hand, we can have something that's supernatural according to substance merely on the part of its efficient causality. So this is miracles. Miracles are supernatural according to their efficient causality. So first we can have miracle as regards substance, which glorification of the body or prophecy. Second, miracle as regards the subject into which it is received. So knowledge of the secrets of hearts would be an example of this. And then miracle as regards the manner it is accomplished. So the gifts of tongues is actually really helpful with conceptualizing this. Because you do something which is naturally acquirable, that is learning a language, but you do it in a manner that is miraculous, so you learn it quickly. So what's extremely helpful is that Garrigou actually provides us with a division when it comes to man for our natural and supernatural orders, which if I haven't explained what natural and supernatural orders are, when we talk about the natural order and the supernatural order, we're basically talking about all of nature and all of their interrelations. So the natural order, for example, would include like the physical law, well, like even like the moral laws of ordinary human conduct. So when there is something which is above the ordinary, when it comes to moral conduct, we can describe that as supernatural. For example, said to be the moral miracle of the conversion of the whole world to the Catholic faith. That is not something that's of the natural order. That's something which is of the supernatural order. But anyways, so for man, the natural order is the suitable disposition of natural means to man's natural end. So in this way, we have the following. First, the formal end is possession of God, not through direct intuitive vision of the deity, but rather through reason by means of discursive cognition. So when it comes to man, let's say in a state of pure nature, not raised by sanctifying grace, here we would be called still to the possession of God. This is important. Still to the possession of God, but in a different way, in a different, under a different aspect, yes, and also in a different means of possession. So, second, the supreme agent is God qua author of our nature, who moves us to our natural actions. The secondary agent is man by his human nature and the faculties proper to it. So God is still moving us to this, but through the means of our human nature and the faculties proper to it. The objective means are naturally knowable created things. The subjective means are objective out there, subjective in here. The subjective means are the light of reason, naturally acquired ideas, and the exercise of man's faculties, especially his intellect and will under the influence of God's natural concurrence. And then the law of this order is the natural law. And from this, we get natural merit. So this is the natural order. So we can think of infants in limbo. We can think of had Adam not been given the gift of original justice, which if he had just been given a sort of natural conglomerate of gifts. And then on the other hand, we have the supernatural order here. So the formal end is the possession of God through intuitive vision and love of the same order, for love follows upon knowledge. So up here, we love God as the author of nature, which we can know through a discursive cognition and know him in the same way. Here, we love him and know him with intuitive vision and love. And then the primary agent is God, the author of grace and glory. The secondary agent is man, inasmuch as his nature is elevated through sanctifying grace, the infused virtues, and the gifts of the Holy Spirit. So it's man, it's God as author of grace and glory, and then man, who is raised up by sanctifying grace, having what's said to be a higher principium quo, so principle by which he acts, because he's been given a second nature, which is something which is an accidental elevation of his soul. And then the objective means are the external revelation proposed by the church, the sacraments, all the external supernatural means for salvation. And the subjective means, so in us, are the interior light of faith, as well as the exercise of the supernatural virtues under the supernatural influence of actual grace. And the law is the complex of God's positive precepts. But this is that difference between the natural order, which is ordering us towards that natural end, and the supernatural order, which is ordering us towards that supernatural end. Okay, and then finally, I actually took a quick screenshot of this as well. I think this is a helpful place to close off. A lot more stuff that could have been covered, but as always, you know, time is time, and we need to eventually get through this book. But this question that he asked, could that which is only efficiently supernatural be produced by God inasmuch as he is the author of nature? So this gives us, I guess, a little bit of a thought project to help pull this stuff together. So could God, as author of nature, do miracles, basically? Could he do that? Gehrig is going to answer yes. And his reasoning for yes is that we actually need some sort of link when it comes to the motives of credibility, to where we can naturally know that that is a miracle right there. So we can actually naturally make the judgment of credibility. So that we need that sort of link. That and we can also have miracles that are proposed. They're used in order to confirm naturally knowable truths, rather than necessarily the supernatural mysteries of our religion. Okay, unfortunately, I have to go. Definitely, if you're interested in this, I kind of went over the basics. But if you're interested in this, definitely read chapter 6.